right, it's time for more GoldSeek.com radio. Today's featured guest, Axel Merk of Merk Investments. Axel Merk, President and CIO of Merk Investments, manager of the Merk Funds, as well as author of Sustainable Wealth. Welcome back, Mr. Merk.
Great to be with you.
You've noted recently that even if the Fed raises rates, it could be ill-timed, that they just simply are not keeping in step with the interest rate and monetary policy, for that matter, around the world.
Well, intentionally so, I might say. Since the spring, I believe April of 2014, the last paragraph of the FOMC statement says that even as they will start to raise rates, and that would be because the GDP growth and inflation goes back to what is historically be considered normal, rates will likely be lower than what is considered normal. Now, they use fancy words, but basically the Fed is all but promising, and that's my interpretation, to be behind the curve. Bernanke was pretty good at articulating that. He said when you're faced with a credit bust, you don't want to be raising rates too early. You want to, and that's my interpretation, err on the side of inflation, because if you raise rates too early, odds are the deflationary forces will take over again. And so Yellen doesn't have this framework of the Great Depression. She uses employment as an excuse, but it's ultimately the same thing, that they want to be behind the curve. They want inflation to go up. And the only problem they have, of course, the moment they're trying to take the foot off the accelerator, the world keeps crashing down. And the reason that happens, by the way, is that Fed policy have inflated asset prices. And the moment you step away from that, asset prices come back down. And when you've tried to boost economic growth with asset price inflation, well, guess what? When asset prices come down, it also causes headwind to the real economy.
But with the upcoming political drama in 2016, you know, November presidential election, do you feel that perhaps the Fed governors and policymakers, although you say clearly they've painted themselves into a corner, that if they're going to act, they may have to act soon because they certainly wouldn't want to be seen as making waves or taking any political stance amid the election season?
Well, they're worried about so many different things. I think they haven't even noticed that the election is coming up next year. Central banker, you may like them or not, but they should set policy. They should kind of set the guidepost upon which to price things. You can price risk based on what the Federal Reserve is going to do. The problem we are in is that this so-called, quote-unquote, data-dependent Fed is reading the tea leaves like everybody else. So they're reacting to the latest move in the stock market, to the latest this and that, and they don't quite know what they're doing. And so they get worried about the Chinese sneezing or something happening in this part of the world or that part of the world. And so that gets them to have their hands tied. And ultimately, some people say, well, it's better than to make a promise and then not live up to it. I don't know. I mean, you look at what's going to happen. You set the course and you adjust according to the reality. Now, the election itself, I don't think that's going to be the key driver here. I think the bigger issue they have is Mr. Market itself, that the rising volatility in the market, which had to come sooner or later, is going to tie their hands, because what a rising volatility does is it makes investors more risk averse. And the whole point of QE and of all this money printing was to take risk away, that things are no longer risky. Investing in anything is quote-unquote risk-free. I mean, of course it isn't, but risk premium had been compressed. Junk bonds don't yield anything anymore, and volatility in the stock market had been low. And now as the Fed is trying to engineer an exit, risk is coming back with a vengeance.
Now, as you've noted in the past, what the Fed does when they essentially issue a put for investors is reduce volatility and risk to virtually null, and that has the effect, if you will, of leading to complacency. I mean, for instance, obviously investors start to just get used to the idea, well, stocks always move up. It's happened since 2009. Obviously, the Fed is there. They have our backs. A monetary policy, the plunge protection team, is certainly a strong combination. However, as you know, Nassim Taleb just found out, and so did his hedge fund investors, you can make $1 billion in a week if you prepare for spikes in volatility. And that's certainly what we've seen lately. Should investors be bracing for more volatility?
Well, the world is, of course, still risky. And what happens, and yes is the short answer, but what happens is when, say, the stock market is rising and rising and rising on a backdrop of low volatility, then people put in the money not appreciating how risky these markets are. And so, of course, markets are still risky. When risk comes back to the market, investors will say, I didn't sign up for that. And so, of course, the time to diversify your portfolio is always during the good times, but in practice, that rarely ever happens. And so now, I believe the shift that has happened in recent weeks is rather than the glass being half full, investors will now look at the glass half empty. Because what they should have done, they should have taken some chips off the table. But the problem is, of course, where on earth do you put your chips? You get 0% interest on in cash, and if you put your money in bonds, well, good luck. They might be going down in a rising interest rate environment. And so we've been approached by folks that say, well, what about a put option strategy or this or that? And it says, yeah, we can do that. But ultimately, it means you just have too much money in the stock market, right? Now that volatility is back, people are coming back from the summer break, and they realize, well, maybe I should put some of the stuff into more secure places. And that, of course, happens not just with retail investors. Any professional investor, when volatility is up, is paring down leverage as well. And, of course, when everybody does it together, asset prices come down. And that's why we had been warning. We came out in early August with a note that shorting the market, not just being in cash. And people said, why on earth would a currency and precious metals guy talk about the stock market? And then 2 weeks later said, oh, it's because of currencies that the markets are crashing. So it is time to be very careful in this market, both on a fundamental and on a technical level, but also from the metrics we look at, which is a lot of it is complacency driven, meaning complacency is our biggest bubble indicator that we have. We are extremely concerned about the markets right now.
There is diversification. Obviously, investors can turn to this, the free lunch, if you will. However, it's becoming harder to find balanced portfolio, or harder to hide, if you will, from volatility, as many of these markets have become highly correlated. And I think we see this just across the board. Investors used to be able to turn, let's say, to stocks and bonds and throw in a little bit of precious metals. But in a deflationary environment, all three of those asset classes could find themselves in trouble. Are you recommending currency exposure? For instance, the greenback has done remarkably well. It's in a solid uptrend. Give us your idea on the currency markets, please.
Well, first of all, there is no easy answer. If you look at the correction in August as well, anything that was the slam dunk went the other direction. And by all means, one of the things you might have noticed, you just mentioned the greenback, the dollar was rising over the past year. Well, it was rising on the backdrop of a rising stock market. That's not supposed to happen. What's supposed to be happening is that the dollar is rising in a flight to quality. And so sure enough, when the markets came tumbling down in August, the dollar was falling at the same time. You couldn't hide in the traditional safe haven places. The reason for that was, of course, partially anyway, that everybody, quote unquote, everybody hated the euro. People were short the euro. People used it as a funding currency for carry trades, whatever way you want to call it. And then when volatility came up, people lowered the exposure, and when you lower your exposure, you have to buy back the euro. And so that's how you can have these awkward things happening. I would not recommend people to kind of go all out and buy the greenback, because everybody else loves the greenback. Everybody else has rising rates. We have rising rates and whatnot. Everything looks great in the U.S. In my view, things are not perfect in the U.S., and things are not quite as bad in the rest of the world. There's too much good news priced into the dollar. And ultimately, and we see that with the sort of when you have overexposed position, what can happen? What you can do with currencies is you can design a portfolio that has a low correlation to something else. Say you take a position of the euro versus the Swedish crown, the Australian dollar versus the New Zealand dollar. Now, clearly, most people won't do that and can't do that. But what you can do with that is you can generate by design a return stream that is not correlated to your portfolio. And that's why investors, I think, should at least have a look at some of these alternative strategies, because, as you point out, things are highly correlated. How do you hide? How do you diversify? Bernanke talked about a toolbox. That's why I think it's very valuable to have a toolbox available to be ready for what's ahead. And I think the time has come for if volatility is going to be elevated, if asset price is going to come down, for strategies that are long-short strategies, be it on the currency side, maybe on the equity side, or some other areas. Obviously, all of these have their own sets of risks and pitfalls, but you've got to think out of the box for the environment. That's it.
One asset class that has safe haven properties, at least in some economic environments, the precious metals. Sometimes viewed as a currency, even the currency of last resort, this asset class has suffered in recent years. Do you see any silver lining? Do you see any light on the horizon for precious metals investors and aficionados?
Think about it. I mean, we talked about things out of favor. Gold is out of favor by most people. Stocks are in favor. Well, from that point of view alone, it's worth looking at it. Then I mentioned earlier that, in my view, the Fed is all but promising to be behind the curve. A rising rate environment, in my view, matters less so than where real interest rates are. Gold, being a brick, obviously doesn't pay any interest and is a good competitor to cash when you don't get compensated holding cash. I don't think you get compensated for cash. I don't think we're going to get compensated properly anyway for cash going forward if the Fed is behind the curve. I don't think we can afford positive real interest rates in a decade from now. And as such, I think gold plays a good role. And then on top of that, gold does have, in the long run anyway, a near zero correlation to equities, another reason to consider gold. Now, I do have to say, I did chat with policymakers at the FOMC and mentioned my view that, hey, I don't think we can afford positive real interest rates in a decade from now. And he said, he looked at me and says, well, he doesn't think that's possible because that wouldn't create a stable equilibrium. And my response was, I never said it's going to be stable.
Well, as we wrap up today, can you tell investors any other markets you're watching or perhaps any other topicality that you think's pertinent for our listeners?
The good old basic thing is that you always want to be properly diversified, but it doesn't mean the same thing as it meant in the past, because just being diversified to different industries doesn't cut it. Odds are investors are overexposed to stocks because they've been riding the wave up. Take chips off the table, consider doing that. And then beyond that, think out of the box. I mean, we have currency mutual funds, we have a gold ETF. Those are all things investors can look at, but ultimately it is about trying to see how can one be defensive in a world where everybody is pushed into risky assets. And that also means leaving chips off the table. You don't have to chase every rally that's out there. You want to have chips on the table for when the markets come down, that you have some firing power to go back into the markets.
Please tell people more about Merck Investments as well as the Merck Funds.
Yeah, sure. Come to our website, merckinvestments.com, and we have a free newsletter. I tweet a lot. If you want to have instantaneous interpretation on the news, follow me on Twitter. Axel Merck is my handle. We do have three currency mutual funds and a gold ETF. All of that, you can find our website. There are links to there. But I, as a first step, follow me on Twitter and then sign up for our newsletter if you want to hear more about our views. We also have a webinar coming up on how to prepare for a potential crash. Information on that is on our website as well. And so come to our website and learn more about what we do.
One interesting note about the gold, or at least fund that you manage there, as I understand it, looking over the literature, this is actually a deliverable fund. Can you tell investors more?
Yes, certainly. We have a gold ETF that holds London bars in London. Investors holding the gold ETF have a pro rata ownership in the underlying gold. Investors may at any time request delivery. Most people don't, but our delivery feature is not just theoretical. It's a real one. You can request delivery of the London bars, but when you request delivery, you can also request an exchange into coins. And so you can literally have American Gold Eagles or very common coins delivered to your doorstep. The process takes a good week, and it's scalable. We can, if we had a rush of people trying to take delivery, we can do it, and we have done it in practice. The ETF tracks the price of gold, and so it acts like an ETF, but it is deliverable, and it's something for some investors to look at.
Well, that's remarkable, because I think it's clear that many of these top ETFs, including StreetTrax Gold ETF, the top GLD ticker symbol, simply they do have the option of deliverability, but you have to be a major player. As I understand it, it's typically in excess of $1 million of an ETF investment, oftentimes substantially more. It's really up to the discretion of the fund manager, so there's no guarantees that anybody owns these ETF shares. I hope our listeners will invest or at least take a look at the literature. Is there a ticker symbol you'd like to share today?
Yes, the ticker is OUNZ, and of course guarantees is another word that this industry likes to use, but yes, this is a deliverable gold ETF where investors may request delivery of of the gold. It trades like an ETF, and you can take delivery of the physical gold. And, oh, by the way, one very nice feature, in my view anyway, is that taking delivery in itself is not a taxable event. That means if you have appreciated shares of the Merck Gold Trust and you decide to that you'd rather own the coin instead, that like, oh, the time has come, I'd like to have a coin at home, or I'd like to have them shipped to Canada or somewhere else, and we can make that happen. That in itself is not a taxable event because you already own the gold, you're just taking delivery of it. And that is something that if you own other gold ETFs, even if they claim that they provide delivery, usually you'd have to sell the ETF, pay potential taxes, and then with the proceeds you can buy the coin, whereas with ours you can actually just take delivery of what you already own.
O-U-N-Z. Look into this ticker symbol. We appreciate your thoughts. Please keep up the great work and hopefully return to our show soon.
My pleasure.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.